When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, Harry, are you all set?
I am ready, yes.
Lovely. Let me bring this up. I just want to check something quickly.
Hello and welcome to the Motor Mouth Podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between. Another week, another podcast. Are you bored of us yet? Of course not. And we have got a cracker of an episode for you this week. We linked up with a touring car legend, Mr. Tom Chilton, champion and race winner, having rose to fame through the World Touring Car Championship and, of course, the British Touring Car Championship. He's a top bloke who is still enjoying an incredible career. And we sat down with him over Zoom, of course, to chat all things career, family life, that Take Me Out appearance, and whether he prefers scales or fur. That'll make sense at the end of the episode. Thank you so much to you guys who continue to download and listen. If you like it, please do leave us a review. It really helps us to get bigger and enjoy.
Welcome to episode 23 of the Motor Mouth Podcast. As always, before we introduce today's guests, I need to shimmy over to Southeast England, to the land that brought us the longest pleasure pier in the world, and introduce not only the tallest man I know, but now with lockdown, the man with the tallest hair I know. Harry Benjamin, how are you?
Yeah, I'm really in two minds about shaving my own hair. It's really becoming quite thick and horrible. But someone, I put it on my Instagram, my old hairdresser follows me on Instagram and was like, do not shave it all off. It will grow back like carpet. So I think that's an advice for everyone. Don't shave your own hair.
It won't. It'll be fine. I put a thing on Instagram about whether you should shave it off or not. And fortunately, it ended in your favour. But I'm going to try again and tell you until you have to shave it off.
Until I have to shave it off, no. The day that happens will be a terrible day. I can't ever shave my beard off ever. I look like I'm 7 years old again. How's lockdown life for you? Still going?
Same. Homeschooling, clearing up 24/7 after annoying children. I've got nothing. I'm running still running 5K a day.
Get that in there.
Yeah, get that in there. Did an exercise class this morning. That's about it.
I've given up on my Joe Wicks. It's terrible.
Yeah, well, no staying power. Anyway, look, let me introduce today's guest. So today's guest is a touring car legend and one of the nicest guys you're ever likely to meet in a racing paddock. He's currently, when not confined to lockdown, racing with BTC Racing in the British Touring Car Championship, a series he first appeared in back in 2002 behind the wheel of a Vauxhall Astra Coupe at just 17 years old. Fast forward through a stint in the World Touring Car Championship, Tom returned to the British scene in 2017 with Paramax Racing. He's a multiple race winner, trophy hunter and championship victor, and now looks forward to stepping into the Civic Type R when we finally get racing back underway. Ladies and gents, welcome Tom Chilton. How are you, my friend?
Hello, everyone. Oh, look at that. Round of applause. I love that.
Just for you. Okay. No one else gets that. How's things in lockdown?
Do you know what? It's very different, isn't it? I'm not going at 200 miles an hour around a race circuit. I'm homeschooling three boys under 6 years old, which is pretty hard. I have a very small garden, so it's quite tough. I think the neighbours keep closing their windows because they're quite noisy. But it's, do you know what, mate? Everyone's doing it. Yeah. Everyone around the country is in the same boat. You just got to get on with it. Yep. And make sure you can do the best you possibly can. It's a great chance to really have some, you know, good quality time with the family.
Mm, absolutely.
And they can't get away with anything here because we're obviously going to stamp down on it. Whereas at school, they might get away with a few things, you know.
Yeah. So,
hey, are you Mr. Chilton at home?
Yeah, I'm sir. Yeah. I've been debating on putting them in their school uniform.
Really?
Mindset. You know, as a professional sportsman, it's all about the mindset, isn't it?
So I'm quite. You know, you're there wearing your kit. They should be as well.
I'm having a podcast, but I've got my B2C Racing.
Yeah, polo very
shirt
smart.
On.
Yeah, lovely shade of pink they have, by the way.
It's fuchsia colour. They
fuchsia.
Tell me.
Huge apologies. Now listen, Tom, we like to keep things very sophisticated and highbrow here, so the first question we're going to ask you, let's start as we mean to go on. Take me out, tell me all about it. What was going through your mind when you went on Take Me Out all those years ago?
When I was doing my research for this, that was the first video I stumbled across, and I immediately texted him being like, what? He was on Take Me Out?
I look at it now and go, what as well? Things you do for sponsorship. So it wasn't to find true love. I can promise you that. I had no problem in that area. This was purely a sponsorship. I linked it together with the Top Gear I was doing. So I did the double episode. Literally was out a couple of weeks before, which was when I had to roll the double decker bus and I had to race Jeremy Clarkson in a white M3, and he was in a blue Lexus. And they went straight on to Take Me Out. So I had another 6 million viewers live, got replayed a lot on ITV4. So it was just, I was trying to get Scorchkoff, a hair gel sponsor. As you all know, I was kind of famous for my hair.
Yes,
yeah. My driving. And now it's very much to date these days. But in the old days, I nicknamed Sonic and had spiky hair. And if you actually pick up a Scorchkoff product now, look on the back of the gels, in small print, it says helmet hair proof. That's how close I got to getting that deal together. But it fell through, sadly, at the last minute.
There's still time. You've still got lovely hair. Time,
yeah. But that was what I was pushing for, to get a hair gel sponsor, and it worked really well with Take Me Out, purely for the fact it was Talkback Thames TV who were doing it, who was at the Granada Studios in Manchester where we filmed, which is exactly where X Factor was the weekend before. So it was like the same audience Saturday evening, same company, same stage. So it was kind of, it was a good crowd, you know. So that was purely it, mate. But I did meet a lovely girl called Callie who's... it was a lovely girl, but you know, it wasn't meant to be. But I, as you know, I went on that show for one reason only,
and a free holiday, you know, Isle of Fernando.
Free holiday.
You made it to the Isle of Fernando?
No, I didn't. I went to Fernando's, the restaurant, Coco Lounge in Manchester.
it was purely a tactical move then.
It was tactical. Everything I do is tactical, mate.
He's a clever sausage, this one. Right, well, let's get serious. So let's take it back to the beginning. When did racing become a thing for you? When did you think, this is it, this is the path I want to go down? Do you remember that moment?
I remember having a lot of fun as a kid in fields, whether it was in Ford Escort Mark IIs when I was 8 years old or quad bike when I was 11. But it wasn't until I passed my racing car license, National B, at 13 years old, 10 months, was when I realised I could potentially be a racing driver. But it didn't really dawn on me properly until I entered the British Touring Cars when I was 17 years old. In my first ever race, I finished third.
And you were the youngest at the time, I think, to get a podium. Is that right?
I still am.
I still am
the youngest to get a podium. I was only about 18 days or something past turning. It wasn't even that, actually. I think it was 15, no, been less than that. Been about 13 days or something after turning 17 years old was my first race.
Right.
Had you passed your actual driving license, your road card?
I hadn't even driven on L plates on the road by this.
Wow.
And I finished third on the podium with Matt Neal and Dan Eaves, and I actually hit off Anthony Reid and Tim Harvey because it insulted me in Autosport magazine the week before. Double page spread. This kid should be in school, they said.
No.
I was like, I'll show you boys.
Is that right?
That is the true story.
Wow.
That's why I hit them both off in that race, because they both insulted me.
Just going back to when you were 17 and getting that podium so early, how did that affect you mentally? Did it lull you into a full sense of security, or do you think it stood you in good stead moving forwards?
No, it was good. I liked an early podium, obviously. You start thinking, I don't know if I should be here. I'm quite young, you know, like I've still got an awful lot to learn. And the rest of the year became a lot harder. And I only then got really an independent win at Knockhill and the rain, I seem to remember. I can't remember if I got any other podiums. I think that might have been it in the first year. But I think we just had a lucky streak to start with, and we went testing and it helped set the car up nicely. But we were always on the back foot because we're an independent. We didn't have the budget, so we didn't quite have all the kit, if you like, to try and make it go as fast. But it was really good getting that off my shoulders. And I sadly didn't win the next year in 2003. I didn't win till the year after in 2004 when I was 19 years old at Silverstone, which was a great first win. I went from 10th to 1st at Silverstone.
Wow.
But it doesn't get much better than that. And it was a dry race. It wasn't like people were falling off and it was wet.
Yeah.
The only thing was that Matt Neal and Anthony Reid got in a bit of a scruff, and I was kind of like laughing as I was driving past to take the win. Ended up hitting each other off side on side, but it was Anthony Reid style, which is quite exciting to watch when he's on track.
As you were growing up and going through the ranks, was touring cars always on your radar? Was that the series that you wanted to be in, or were you looking, you know, at, was it whatever you could get, or did you have a career in mind and that was what you wanted?
Yeah, so my brother and me are very different in size, basically. So Max is like a skeleton, so he's always done the single seater karting route, and I've always tried my hardest to stay fit. But you know, me fits 13 stone to 14 stone, whereas his fit is a lot lighter. So that makes a big difference on what you can drive competitively. So I've always had to be really in tin tops, although I have had a dabble in LMP1 cars and won 2 out of 5 races. It still hurts me. I see to my teammates, I can never be quite as quick because I'm just heavy. Because you can't ballast up a light driver. It's a minimum, you know, it doesn't work like that, sadly.
Right.
So for me, the British touring cars has always really kind of been the right thing for me. But at a young age, why we decided to go there was purely for sponsorship. It had ITV. In those days, ITV1. And do you know what? You always go for the TV deals. You don't bother with any other form of racing unless you don't feel that you're fast enough as a driver, because you need to go for the TV packages, because that's how you can ask for more money from sponsors. And I was very lucky when I was 17. Caliber was my first sponsor. It's obviously a non-alcoholic beer, which was perfect at 17.
Yeah.
I couldn't drink enough cans of the stuff, though. About 1,000 cans and, you know, a couple hundred grand in cash, but I couldn't drink all the cans. They started going off in my cellar.
Oh, God.
And I tried drinking a lot of it in one go, and I started getting a headache. And I was like, I'm dehydrated from drinking non-alcoholic beer. So that's not that one on my head.
But you've had to work really hard at your fitness, haven't you? I mean, to the point where you've had sponsors that specialise in weight loss. And how hard do you have to get to train to get yourself in shape? I know you've yo-yoed over the years and you're incredibly fit now. I've seen some of your pictures on your socials with your 6-week challenge. But how much of an issue is it for you, and how hard do you have to work to keep in shape?
Do you know what? For me, it's always been a huge issue. And as you know, Light to Life Fast was one of my sponsors, the 5-2 diet. And as you say, yo-yo's a no-no.
Yeah.
But I've done every diet fad going, basically, to do what I can. But this year, my new training is nose breathing and sort of doing longer distances and
hold on.
More distance.
Nose breathing?
Nose breathing. So in through the nose and out through the mouth. As soon as you need to open your mouth to breathe in, if you're going up a hill, you're pushing too hard. If you open up your mouth, you obviously can go faster. That's a no-brainer because it's an air restrictor like on an engine. But if you can always maintain your training, nose breathing, you'll fat burn. You'll definitely fat burn better because you're in zone sort of 1-2.
That's a life changer.
And you can do it every day or twice a day every day because you're not going to be overly fatigued. And that is the key to training and staying fit, is consistency. In my old days, I used to go out and hammer myself for like 3 hours or something.
Puffing and then panting.
I need 4 days off because I'm just wrecked and I need a physio. And like, you know what I mean? Like, and I've learned that is the wrong way to train.
Yeah.
You're better off just holding yourself back and doing it more regularly.
British touring cars, once you've arrived there, you're in, you've got that podium under your belt. What's next? Is it hard not to sort of reach a glass ceiling quite quickly because you've made it to the championship that you had your eyes on. And I suppose, how do you stop it from getting boring?
Ask Matt Neal, he's been in it 30 years.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. British Touring Cars has sometimes
I've been in 16 years, which I think is a long time, but Matt is double, he's 30 years. And you know what? Every year, I swear it gets more competitive, or I'm getting slower. I don't think I'm getting slower. I get more competitive.
Yeah.
And everyone's a typical motorsport is always trying to make their cars faster and faster and faster. And everyone nowadays, I think, are doing more simulator work. And you know what? That does help these younger kids coming up through the ranks, out of the box. They're a little bit faster, a little bit more confident. I think that's why it's never boring, because it's always changing. It's not like, you know, I don't want to say an accountant, for example, goes in and pulls his computer up and he has to just punch in numbers every day. That, for me, doesn't change other than the number, but it's the same.
Yeah.
Whereas for this, every time it's a slightly different temperature, or they've done something different to the tarmac, or you've got different success ballast in your car, you need a different setup, we've got different tire compounds. We have three different tire compounds now.
Yeah.
And two different brake pad compounds. All this changes everything. And so you're always evolving and changing. And so for me, it's never boring. And I've got so much passion and love for what I do. I don't think I'd ever get bored of it, ever.
Good.
So no plans to quit anytime soon.
Definitely not.
Excellent. That's what we like to hear. But you've dabbled in other forms of racing. You did a 1,000-kilometer race alongside Max, right, at Silverstone. Do you enjoy that form of racing?
So I liked doing it in terms of I like getting on my CV and I like to say that I've raced at all these circuits and I've won Nürburgring 1000K and I've won Laguna Seca, but I don't want to get back in it. I don't really want to get back in it because it's huge downforce. It's not mechanical grip. I love mechanical grip. I like going sideways and those things, you set them up, I'm going to be honest, with a little bit of understeer. Because when the oversteer happens at 180 miles an hour, it's not a controllable one usually. It's usually a snap, violent oversteer. That's just down to your whole of wing on the back or the millimetre of ride height. And for me, it's kind of, you're a bit of a passenger. And I like to actually feel what I'm doing. And when I'm racing up close to people in the touring cars, I can be 2-3 abreast and still have a good time, you know, on the limit.
What is the most terrifying circuit you've been on, either racing or just, you know, setting lap times in a track car?
Nordschleife, surely.
So I think the Nordschleife's easier than I think Villarreal.
What?
I think Villarreal, I know, it's a weird one, isn't it? I think Villarreal, which Sir Stirling Moss said was the best racing circuit in the world, I think is the hardest. I think it was quite challenging. I finished second there, but the Nordschleifering, I found it easier once I learned the circuit after a few hours of driving it, because the corners pretty much do this. They roll into the apex and you always let go of the steering wheel and it like drives itself. It like turns you into the corners. And yeah, it's the biggest adrenaline buzz in the world when you're flying around that circuit. I mean, it's the most exciting circuit to drive is the Nordschleifering in my mind. But the one which I probably get the most nervous driving is Villarreal, which is a street circuit, more so than Macau or other Marrakesh as well, other street circuits in Porto. I think that Villarreal one is probably the one. There's a corner. One corner is what I'm really thinking of. It goes down a hill. You know, the limiter in sixth gear, you're riding about 170 miles an hour, and you go in flat, but you can only go in flat at the end of Saturday when the circuit's a bit clean. It's a road circuit and new tyres. And you're going in faster because you've got a bit more horsepower for qualifying. You come out the last corner a bit quicker because you've got new tyres. And it's the first time you do it flat. And you're like, how am I going to make it? And you have to make sure your wing mirror misses the barrier by like a few inches. You don't hit it because then you'll ping ball off and go through the barrier into a few houses. Just miss it. And as it's going down this hill, it's accelerating so fast, your heart's in your mouth. It's going down a hill and it turns left and the camber falls away. So you're turning in flat and it wants to oversteer. But if you lift at that point there, obviously you'll get more pitch on the front, you'll get more downs on the front, you'll get even more oversteer. So as much starts oversteering, you start going, I think I might hit the barrier, you've got to keep it flat. And then you've got the white lines on the exit, and then it like, it then sort of jumps, and then it grips, it hits these painted white lines, and then it bumps again, you go, oh, and then your mirror at 170 miles an hour feels like it's in your right eye, and you're missing the barrier by inches, and then you've got to brake while turning again into the chicane. You've got to go from sixth to second gear, you jump over these giant sausage curves. And every lap, you don't know if you're going to make it. And it's just like insane. The Nordschleifering is faster, right? It's six gear, lots of first six gear corners. You're drifting, left foot braking. And it's like it feels like art to drive that on the limit. It's not a smoother circuit, even though it's bumpy. The tarmac's smooth, it's not a street circuit. And that is a different type of driving. And that I love as well. Hence, I got the lap record round that in 2000.
All of that sounds terrifying and is exactly the reason why I don't want to be a racing driver.
But I can also see why that is exactly the reason why someone would want to be a racing driver.
Yeah. And by the way, people, we don't condone driving around the Nordschleifer without using your hands.
you let go and it does it all for you.
It's fine. Was it? But Macau's pretty mental. Was that the one where it was a few years ago where there was an enormous pile up which ended up with nearly all the cars stationary?
That's right. I mean, I was in one of those in the World Touring cars, and there was one just before us in the GT race. And I came down the hill into the same corner. Someone locked up and hit the barrier. I'm flying down this hill in fifth gear, and I'm like, you can't go left or right.
Nowhere to go.
Lock the circuit. Then you crash, and someone hits you behind, and then it's just a pinball effect. but that was crazy. That was in practice that happened, I think, to us.
Right.
And then on the race day, it was pouring with rain. And I've been to Macau, I don't know, eight times, something, but I remember quite a few times I've been to Macau. But I've never been there when it's rained. Not on a race day. Had like a practice session a bit damp. I've never on a race day. It was pouring, mate, like monsoon pouring. I was going down the straight, and there's four lanes, like the M25 there. And at one point, I'm in like lane two, for example, keeping the lock dead straight, flat out, six gear. The next thing, I'm in lane four, and I haven't moved the steering wheel. I was like, I've just aquaplaned. I'm wheel spinning in fifth and sixth gear, wheel spinning. And there's hotels, you know, like 120 floors going past your head at sort of 160, 170 miles an hour. And as soon as you hit the brake at the end of the straight to Lisboa, you don't even hit the brake pedal hard. I'm not even joking. And the engine locks and it goes quiet in the car. It's the engine stall.
Oh, Christ.
And then you left it braking, and then you have to whoom, hit the throttle and you go down the gear to then get the engine going again to get the wheels moving. So that's how you get the water flowing out the tyres. And
God.
And every lap, Jesus, you're braking locked up. I locked up for 40 metres every lap in that race. And I finished third and got on the podium. But I locked up for 40, 50 metres every lap, engine quiet in the car. And you're like, I'm going straight on through the cut through. And you think the cut through is not long enough when you first lock up, because you're going 170 miles an hour. And you hit the brake pedal and you go, nah, that cut through is not even long enough. We're going to end up in the hotel behind that. And then it just about grips. It's like, and that is when like the diff's like trying to scramble for grip and the wheels looking up, trying to get the throttle going again on each gear because it keeps going to lock up and going. It's making my heart race.
Just crazy.
Every lap you think you potentially going to go straight on and maybe take out people in front of you, but
then you end up third. That's not too shabby. Yeah. What do you say is the best race car then you've ever driven?
That car, the Citroen.
Yeah.
The Citroen CLC was Sebastian Loeb Racing in its second year. First year, we're still figuring it out a little bit, if I'm honest. And I was still learning to drive the car as well. It was something very different to what I'd ever driven before. And the second year I was in it, I learned how to drive it, learned what we needed to do, set up at different circuits. And it was the best car I've ever driven. It's the best touring car ever. I know you get these old DTM cars, which are rear-wheel drive. They are the old school, you know, like the old Mercedes, BMW, DTM cars. Well, they had all the crazy downforce. Those were the best rear-wheel drive touring cars, but the best front-wheel drive touring cars on the planet ever, definitely, are these TC1 World Touring cars, which don't exist anymore. You can't race them anymore. It's called TC, no.
But that was with Sebastian Loeb, an independent team, right? And that's, so presumably that was a customer to the Citroën teams that were running their works cars with their huge budgets. I'm just trying to think back to that time. So you were racing an amazing car, but didn't have the budgets that those big works Citroëns did. Was that frustrating? You know, that must have been really annoying, knowing you're in the same machinery, but you can't compete because of money.
It was a very big difference in budget, for sure. But, you know, I think Special Ed Racing were very, very professional. They did get some great sponsors on the car, and we did have a very, very good budget. But, you know, our budget was probably 30 million euros shy of the works team, put it into perspective. But our cars looked like brand new every time we went out.
Yeah.
We never had a failure, really reliable.
And what a guy to work with.
And what a guy, yeah, I mean, the team was epic. It's the best team I've worked with. It was basically a Formula One spec.
Present teams excluded, obviously.
What, sorry?
Present team excluded, obviously. BTC Racing. Excluded,
obviously. For me, I was there for 2 years, and, you know, we ended up being World Touring Car Champions in class and third overall. And the third overall meant a lot to me because that broke up the works Volvos and Hondas, who are spending sort of 30 to 40 million euros each to run three car teams. You know, so there's like six works cars, and I finished third. And yeah, I beat Rob Puff, who's a world champion before, in the same machinery as me, Amedi Bonanni, who was the world independent champion the year before. And I beat them all in the same car. So for me, that was a very special year. And that was the best race of my life, really, that last race, because it all had to happen in that race. And yeah, I started fifth, and my teammate was first because of the reverse grid. So I had to fight through the field. And I managed to overtake him and pull out a couple of second lead right at the end. And it was definitely an exciting race, because we went wheel to wheel a few times and we were drifting, and, you know, anything could happen. You could get a punch or whatever. It's all game over. But pray to the right God and it all worked. It was marvellous.
Good times, really good times. I remember it well. And then you moved on to, I never know how to pronounce it, whether it's Roll or Raul. Raul Motorsport, alongside social media monster Tom Coronel, who seems to be...
Oh my God, yes.
Just following the world. So
he's the nicest teammate I've ever had, Tom Coronel. He's the funnest, most honest racing driver I've ever worked with. And Raul Motorsport was a fantastic team. The RO stood for Roberto Ravaglia, legend, the AL stood for Aldo, and the team was great. And Tom Coronel from Holland, with his Dutch accent, just every time he spoke made me laugh. But he was a great driver, a great teammate, he taught me an awful lot, if I'm completely honest, in how to enjoy yourself and be fast at the same time. And you know what, that's a big part of it. I think, you know, a lot of this sport is mental, but if you focus too hard on silly areas, you end up not being natural at it. It's like, I think golf's a good analogy. So if you go up to a golf ball and you try and hit a golf ball really hard, or it's a really important shot, you're usually going to just muck it up. You're going to miss it. It's going to go right. You're going to hit the ground too much. Something will go wrong. But if the shot means nothing and you don't need to hit it very far and you just swing, it'll go dead straight and it'll be a lovely shot. No vibrations through the hands. You know, you don't want to chuck your club out your bag. You know, you think that was a really nice shot and you didn't try. And that's the same with motorsport. If you're relaxed and happy, yeah, everything comes together really nicely, and that's kind of what I learned from Tom, really.
But, yeah. So you learned a lot from him. Have you had a hero growing up, racing or otherwise?
I think Jim Clark is the best racing driver to ever walk the planet. He did so many different things, you know, from British touring cars to Indy cars to Formula One, and he was two times world Formula One champion, you know, not as many now as like Lewis Hamilton or Sebastian or, you know, all these boys, Mark Schumacher. But I just feel like in those days it was mechanical grip, and that's what I'm about. I'm not about all this downforce malarkey. I'm about mechanical grip, and he was driving cars, which was all about the feel, you know, and so I respect him and think he's the best racing driver.
And when you left World Touring Cars, as it was then, and returned to British Touring Cars, how did that feel coming back after a few years out?
Do you know what? It was really nice coming back to see all my fans. He's same faces, mate. It's crazy. You leave something after being in it for 10 years and you come back sort of 4 or 5 years later and it's all the same guys in it. It's great. You can just leave it and come back. It's a bit like watching EastEnders, you know, you can leave it for like a few years and come back and it's all the same, really.
Yeah, Phil's still there.
It's like that for British Touring Cars. But the fans are growing, the TV audience is growing, and the grid's always growing, it always feels like. and it was just really nice to come back. My first year back was a bit of a learning year to learn the new NGTC regulations. I didn't focus too hard on it. It was just more clicking gears and getting used to all the different tyres and how it all works. I was really focusing that year on the world touring cars, which is where I did well. Then I came back and I said, right, now I'm just doing the British, just going to focus on that. And I finished third overall in the British touring cars. And then last year was a bit of a struggle because I was in the oldest car on the grid. I was in a 7-year-old car. It was tired. The chassis was tired. I did best when it rained or low grip circuit. As soon as I had a high grip circuit, I was really struggling, especially if I had any success ballasting. Chassis couldn't take it, but Motorbase have built a new Ford now, and I'm sure that'll be great. But I've made the right decision this year, 2020, going to BTC Racing with what I feel is the best opportunity for me to win the British Touring Car Championship this year, although I'm not sure when.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. Is it, what's the latest with British Touring Cars and perhaps a provisional calendar? Revised calendar, even. Have they released anything on their socials?
They have, yeah. So it's going to be 4 race meetings in August.
Right.
We'll start on the first weekend of August. Every weekend is a race weekend. That's going to be so hard on the mechanics and the cars, you know. It's really going to be tough. But that's the plan at the moment. I'm not sure on crowds or any of that stuff. That's all going to be announced later on. And then we've got 2 races in September, 2 races in October, and 1 in November. And, you know, I'm not sure if they'll do some night races if it's in November, get some floodlights up, because it'll be dark, won't it, by 5 o'clock.
That'd be quite cool.
Exactly. That'd be cool.
Get some glow-in-the-dark paint on, you know.
Go faster stripes.
I don't know what's going to happen, but it's all quite exciting, really, because, you know, I've done this for 16 years, so I don't mind a bit of a shake-up, because it's been monotonous for me for so long. So it's quite nice to have a bit of a shake-up. Spend some quality time with the family.
Touch wood, it all comes together and we actually see some racing. Now, something very important for you here, Tom. It's about this time of the show we like to test our guest knowledge. We're going to do that with you, so I'm going to pass over to my esteemed colleague to tell you more.
Yes, Tom Shilton, welcome to Motor Mouths, the hardest quiz in motorsport, as verified by Will Buxton, who we had on the other week. He really struggled, but still with a good point on the board. I have got 4 clips for you that we're going to play you, and I'm going to ask you some questions about each clip. There are 3 points up for grabs for every clip, and then a bonus question. So in total, you could get 13 points. No one has got that. Brendan Hartley is the closest with 12 and a half. He sits at the top. And Karun Chandhok is last with 3.5 points. So that's the one to beat at the moment. We have another British touring car driver on there. We've got Bobby Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
Is currently in 15th position.
Pretty poor show.
With 7 points. So that's let's put that as your low barrier to beat. Let's get clip one on.
Here it comes. Take note. I think you know what that is.
I was on Take Me Out and I was playing the saxophone to the song Tequila.
Absolutely. Can you tell me, though, what year was it?
he thought he nailed that.
Oh, my golly gosh.
That's just 1 point for Take Me Out on the saxophone.
2010.
That is correct. And for another point, can you tell me what episode number it was?
It was series 1, episode 4.
Oh,
you nailed it.
Good start.
3 for that one.
Solid.
You nailed it. Right, that is a strong start. Okay, let's move on to clip number 2. What is happening, when, and where? Have a listen.
Kay's off, I think. Oh, no, it's one of the Vauxhalls that's off. And Chilton's in trouble. He's on the grass as well. And so's Turkington. And we've got cars off at the complex. Well, it's been so clean today.
Oh.
Anyway, it gets tough.
Always struggling.
Chilton and Turkington are off at the complex.
Yep, and there's some Vauxhalls involved.
The question is, which Vauxhalls? I've done 4 years in Vauxhall. The complex.
It's early.
Yeah, which
early
track
days.
Is a complex or is referred? Well, I mean, was referred to as the complex.
Could be quite a few.
It's a British track.
Can you give me a clue on year? Because I've done 4 years in Vauxhalls.
So.
I've done 357 race starts in the British Touring Cars.
Don't make excuses. Yeah, okay.
It makes it harder.
No, what if I said mid-2000s?
Oh, well, that's pretty... That's a giveaway.
Oh, okay, all right. So it would have been... I'm trying to think if we had an instant in the Astra or the Vectra. Oh, mate.
What do you think happened? Have you...
Don't know.
Okay.
I usually know these type of answers in a split second, and I'm literally...
Yeah,
we've got it.
So this is you taking out two Vauxhalls at the start of the race at Thruxton in 2005. Any memory of that? You seem like drawing a blank there.
2005, I wasn't driving a Vauxhall.
You weren't in the Vauxhalls.
We've thrown him here.
Oh, you throw me. I thought you said Chilton and the Vauxhall's taken out. Turkey.
No, you are not in a Vauxhall. Taken them out.
That's why I was trying to think of the years. 2007, 2008.
Well, I'm afraid we've drawn a blank on that one.
I was in a black Lego Star Wars car at Thruxton. I was leading and I had a puncture and I went off at church.
Yeah.
So I lost the race. And then I was probably frustrated the next time. Oh, I remember I tried out breaking everybody up the inside at the complex on the right-hander.
Yeah, there it is.
I went through and I took out everybody.
Straight off.
It's all coming back to me now, mate.
He blocked it out.
Any points and I run out of time. I remember it now.
I think he can have something for that.
You can have half a point. How does that sound? Half a point?
Half a point out of three.
Half point out of three, yeah. It's a tough quiz. Tough quiz, Tom.
Hardest quiz in most sport.
No, one point. It's not half point.
Listen to him. He's driving a hard butt. Harry, I'm going to leave this with you. I'm not getting involved.
Definitely.
Well, hey, look, at the moment, you're on 3.5 already, so you're not going to come last. So
he wants to come first.
I'll buy you a beer. That's definitely a point.
Maybe a non-alcoholic beer. You know what? Fine. You know what? Fine. You get 1 point. I'll give in. Right. You got 4 points on the board. Right. Let's see if you can get any more. Let's hear clip number three. What's going on? Where and when?
This time last year, and this round's now replaced Sonoma, I qualified pole and won there, and I've just done the same thing here. So maybe something in my blood.
Oh, he's struggling again.
That might be the last point you get.
We could give him.
Repeat it.
Yeah, hang on.
Yep.
This time last year, and this round's now replaced Sonoma, I qualified pole and won there, and I've just done the same thing here. So maybe something in my blood.
We could give a clue here.
Replaced Sonoma for a pole at another circuit. In so the touring cars, I'm guessing, obviously.
Yeah.
So, what replaced Sonoma? Where did I qualify pole? I didn't qualify pole in Argentina. I'm trying to think what replaced that.
We could give him the team.
Could do.
So I got a place that was Beijing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Beijing Golden Port in the Rail Motorsport Chevrolet Cruze.
Yes.
Yes, precisely.
What year?
Come on. You can do it.
I know. He
doesn't want to lose this.
1918, 1917.
You get the year, you're drawn level with Bobby.
2015.
Oh,
one out.
2014.
So close. 14. It hurts.
That's all right, though. That's two out of three for that round. You've still got one more clip to play and then a bonus question. So there are still some more points up for grabs. Okay, let's have clip number four, please.
This is easy. You'll get this.
Winner, Tom Chilton. Youngest ever guy to win a race in the BTCC Championship.
What's that got to do?
Okay, so what is happening there? And then... there's a couple other questions off the top of that. So what's going on there?
I'm guessing I was talking about my first ever win at Silverstone 2004. Is what I'm guessing, isn't it?
I'm going to get Tim to play the clip again.
Yeah, let me listen to it again.
Here it comes.
Winner, Tom Chilton, youngest ever guy to win a race in the BTCC Championship.
What's that got to do with...
Do you recognise those voices?
Do you guys interviewing me?
No.
I can't think of the voices. Let me hear it again.
Right, one more time. Third time's the charm.
Winner, Tom Chilton, youngest ever guy to win a race in the BTCC Championship.
What's that got to do?
Everyone is screaming at their mobile phones right now. He hasn't got it. He hasn't got it.
All right, I'm going to tell you that this... So the what part of this question, the answer is, this is when you were picked by Richard Hammond on Top Gear to be on his team for a challenge. Now, you can claw back some questions. You can claw back some points here. What was the challenge and what was the car? So you were picked... Car. Yeah.
If it was a car, then it... With Hammond, it would have been the car football.
Yes. And then what was the car? What was the type of car?
Toyota Ego, and I was on the blue team, which won 2-1.
There we go. You clawed it back there. How did you not recognise Richard Hammond and James May?
Oh, I couldn't recognise the it was not a great quality, mate.
Oh, it's the speakers.
Don't blame the quality. We're doing our best under lockdown scenario. Okay, right. You're looking good though. It's not too shabby. This is your bonus question though. Good luck with this one. If you get this, I'll be amazed. Okay. How many points did you score in your first season of the World Touring Car Championship, according to Wikipedia?
I'm loving this, by the way.
74, I don't know.
Oh, a bit optimistic. 7.
Yeah, I had no idea.
You got a 7th in Morocco and a 10th in Slovakia.
So how are we looking on the leaderboard? So,
sadly not there, so let's just do the counting.
Ford, I forget the Ford was the first year and that was horrendous, wasn't it? Oh, yeah, we'd be about 7, yeah.
Right, okay, let's do the numbers. 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, Tom Chilton, you have scored 8 points, which slots you just above Jack Aitken and just under Sam from Seen Through Glass off of YouTube, which puts you in, I believe that is 14th place. So, you know, and it's a really tough leaderboard, to be fair. I mean, second is joint at the moment between about 4 people. So that's not too shabby. Ahead of Bobby Thompson, Charlie Martin, Nicky Shields and Corinne Chantock and Jack Aitken. So,
not bad.
You know,
not bad,
too
Tom.
Shabby.
Not bad.
How many points did Bobby Thompson get?
He got 7.
He got 7 and I got 8.
And you got 8, so you've beaten him.
That's all I need to know. As long as I'm ahead of them in the quiz and the British Touring Car Championship.
Let the social media banter begin.
good questions, boys. I'm really embarrassed I didn't get 2000.
A lot of research went into that.
Embarrassed I didn't get Richard Hammond's voice because that was an easy point.
That's what makes it the toughest quiz in motorsport. You start questioning yourself.
It's so simple and you can get it wrong.
I know. Well, let's give you a question you will be able to answer without any sort of issue. Let's cast your mind back over your career. What would you say was your highlight, your real point where you thought, yes, I'm happy with that? What was your highlight?
Oh, so many, mate. So many. I could reel off like 50. But I think my biggest win in terms of the most amount of seconds I led a race by was in very low grip, raining conditions where I was just me feeling the grip and dodging the puddles, basically. It was at the Twin Ring Motegi circuit in Japan, which is where MotoGP race. Because we cancelled that year, Suzuka, and we went to the Twin Ring instead. And I won by 14.8 seconds in the rain.
That's
and
ridiculous.
I had all the legend and multiple world champions behind me, from Evan Muller, Lopez, Tarquini, multiple Swedish champion, Ted Bjork. I had them all. Thiago Montero, X-Formula 1 driver. I had everyone behind me, and I pulled out 14.8 seconds in the rain. It was very tricky conditions, and I was just loving life. It just all came to me, you know, and that for me was a very good win for me. As much as it wasn't as good as when I won my class and third overall at Qatar, which was like the race of my life, I think the highlight really is that one in the rain in Japan randomly. I just suddenly thought about it. Yeah.
Oh, cool. That's good. And what would you say you're good at outside of racing? Have you got any hidden talents? Is there something you're especially good at that people don't know about?
I think I'm quite good as a family man. I'm quite good you know, looking after the family, the children and the missus, and making sure they're all happy. And I try and give them what they need all the time by giving them lots of, whether it's meals or, you know, cuddles or reading books or, you know what I mean? Like being romantic. I try to be a good family man. You know, that's me outside of racing.
That's a nice answer. Are you going to get the boys into motor racing?
We'll see. I mean, occasionally they get excited on TV. I think I have to wait to get a little bit older because they're 6'5", 4". I think if they show an eye for it, like as in they want it and they look like they're good, I can't know. But, you know, I probably will be like, nah, you haven't got it, mate. You know, don't bother.
No talent there. Do something else.
Go get Daddy a beer.
What are you useless at, though? Is there anything that you are completely rubbish at?
I'm rubbish at football.
Really?
I am rubbish at football. I've got no sprint, so I'm like an endurance man. So the problem with football is it's like literally sprinting, like squash, sprinting left to right as fast as you can. You know, my missus, she used to play in the Bamington girls, whatever it's called, club, 3 hours every Saturday. And I play Bamington with her. Mate, if we're playing like sort of four games, I usually win one out of four. You know, like, it's a bit like this quiz, you know, like, useless.
Okay, I've got one that comes from not me or Harry. So I think you've met my wife, Chloe, haven't you?
Yeah,
you know Chloe. So she wanted me to ask you a question. It's not very highbrow. It's not clever. She wants to know, would you rather be covered in fur or covered in scales?
It's interesting because obviously I'm born in March, which makes me a Pisces.
Same.
Pisces. So you think I should go scales, shouldn't you? Mm. You always guaranteed a wash, you know, you're clean in the sea. But I do like looking long distance. I like seeing miles ahead, like racing to make it all slow motion. I like being on the top of a hill for a nice view and all that kind of stuff. And so I wouldn't want to be a fish because underwater is predominantly murky. Even when you go to really nice seas in Maldives, you can only see, I don't know, 20 meters, you know, and then it's just a mist.
Yeah.
Boring.
Yeah.
So I'd like to be fur. Your world's your oyster. You can do anything, can't you? If you're an animal, you can go anywhere, do anything. You might get a bit hot and sweaty, like you can get in the shade occasionally. You know, you might have to lick yourself clean if you're a cat. But you know,
amazing answer. Applause.
That was brilliant. Well done, Chloe, for that question.
That was the best answer ever.
Going off of that, then, one last meal. What could it be? What would it be?
Roast dinner.
Yeah.
My roast dinner.
And what kind of meat are you having?
It has to be a really nice bit of roast beef. I love a creamy horseradish with a good Yorkshire.
Crispy roast potatoes.
Creamy leeks. Creamy leeks to go with it makes it all worthwhile when you've got your carrots and your peas and your cabbage and everything else.
I am missing a pub, a roast Sunday lunch at the pub. Yeah, I'm missing that at the moment.
Me too.
It might be difficult to sort of look forward, especially at a time like this, but have you got a plan going forward for, you know, your career? You're 5 years down the line, or are you looking at other business ventures and stuff? Are you just seeing what happens and taking it as it comes?
So I'm always looking to other things, like everybody. Motorsport is always evolving, you know, and like cars are evolving with these hybrids and electric cars, and then that'll eventually go on to hydrogen cells and the rest of it. Like, it's always evolving. So I'm very much eyes are open to all options.
Do you think there'll ever be an electric touring car championship? Well, there are plans for that, aren't there? But
I do think there are plans for electric touring car championship, and I will always keep my options open to race anything. I am very happy with BTC Racing. I'm very happy in the Honda FKH chassis. It's a great car to drive, and I can't wait to get back in the car and race it. And I will do everything I can to stay there for as long as I possibly can. You know, at the end of the day, motorsport's always changing and new things come around. And, you know, if a new manufacturer comes on board and wants to, you know, pay good money, you're not really going to say no, are you? Because, you know, you've got a family to feed and all the rest of it. So it's just life, isn't it? It's quite a fickle world, motorsport, sadly. You know, even when you find all the right guys and the right team and you want to stay there forever, someone offers you, you know, £500,000 to go and race for them for a year, you're not going to
go. Yeah.
So it's kind of, that's what it's like, really. But it's outside of motorsport, I am looking to set up a new company at the moment, looking to do some filming, trying to set up a production company. Got some ideas in the pipeline at the moment, but just
right.
Ticked off and signed off in these tough times at the moment.
Yeah,
I think that's the future for me outside of motorsport is doing some more sort of filming and having a laugh. You know, I like having a laugh and doing what I love at the same time. As much as I do that with motorsport, I think if I can do it while in front of a camera, even better. You know, because I'm not going to stay young and healthy forever. So you need to start getting something slowly in the pipeline for when you get older to get into.
We've got three questions which we ask all our guests. Harry, do you want to kick off?
Yeah, number one, what's got you excited at the moment?
At the thought of coronavirus disappearing and isolation over.
Yes. Good answer.
Positive thoughts.
Number two, if not doing what you're doing, racing, what would you be doing?
If I wasn't a racing driver, I would... Oh, mate, it's such a hard one. I don't know, because I've been doing it since such a young age.
Yeah.
I'd either be talking in front of a whole load of people, or I would be sailing or racing something. I don't know. I need an adrenaline buzz.
You wouldn't be an accountant then.
No, I wouldn't be an accountant, mate. And sorry for anyone who's listening is an accountant.
Yeah.
Excellent job, and I need you.
Very good
as well.
Job.
Yeah, we all need them.
We all need them. For me, it would have to be more outdoor based, so whether it was anything from gardening or designing gardens or being outside, basically. I love being outside and working outside. I think I would have done like racing on a boat, sailing boat. I quite like sailing.
Yeah.
I like the buzz of it. And it's quite peaceful at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's going to Pisces. I want to get close to that water again.
So scales.
Scales, mate. You can't see far underwater, so you want fur.
Yeah.
You really want feathers as the king, because then you can fly where the hell you want. You know, feathers is the key.
Yeah. That's a good point. Very, very good point. Very good point. Our final question for you, if Harry can put himself together.
I'm just imagining like just a whole debate topic of an hour being like, okay, fur, scales or feathers?
I think we could easily fill an hour with that.
Feathers.
I mean, you make a valid point. Yeah, if you can fly, you've won. Okay, final question for you. What are you scared of, birds?
I'm scared of vicious dogs.
Right, yeah.
Pretty much all cats which want to jump and land on you and put their claws in your legs. I'm scared.
I've got two cats.
No, not in your house.
I tried that and I ended up leaving. It's true. I love animals. I love what they do to other people. You know, what I say do to, like, it's great the kids can stroke them and it's great.
Yeah, the happy memories they bring.
Right,
guide dogs, great people who are blind.
And yeah.
There's loads of really big positives, but I just don't want them in my house. Now, you open the door and you go, this house stinks of dog. There's fur.
Actually, that is true.
Well, Harry's got a dog.
I've got a black lab, but he molts, so his fur just, as soon as you touch him, like, there's black hair all over the floor, yeah. And then you've got to hoover it up.
And I've got two cats, and they just make you sneeze.
That's what I was about to say. If you have these cats and they makes you sneeze.
Yeah.
And if you've got black fur, you drop your white towel out the shower and then you've got black fur all on it.
Exactly, yeah. It's a nightmare, but...
first world problems, mate.
Yeah.
Don't worry about coronavirus, but mate,
get the fur off my towel. Come on. Where are my feathers? Oh, dear. God. Tom Chilton, thank you so much for taking the time to come on to our show. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Cheers, boys. Thank you. It's enjoyable. Motormouth over and out.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and on Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile and interact with others, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast. We here at Motormouth are a small, independent team. Since starting this podcast just over a year ago, we're reaching over 15,000 of you across 30 countries around the world. We want to bring the biggest names in motorsport to you. Find out about their lives and careers and have a chat about whatever is going on in the motorsport world. We are determined to carry on producing these episodes. However, they do come at a cost. From securing guests to equipment and editing software and expanding the podcast and app, that's why we've set up a Patreon page where you can help us to carry on doing what we do. There are three levels at which you can contribute, starting from £5 a month to £10 or £20. Each tier allows you slightly different levels of access. Depending on which one you choose, you can enjoy early access to podcast episodes, exclusive member benefits, merchandise, shout-outs, and your chance to feature on one of our shows. Any support you can give us is massively appreciated and will help us grow and continue to bring cool content to race fans all over the world.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.